You're listening to Wake Up Tucson. This podcast is a Bustos Media production on The Voice. Be sure to subscribe wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
All right, this one's moving fast, children. Let's go. You're on Wake Up Tucson, 10:30 The Voice, local news and talk. Leslie Corby coming up at the bottom of the hour. Poetry about the problems with progressivism. Believe it or not, I was like, I got to have some of that. Let's do that. Then we got Tim Sandifer, Vice President of Litigation from Goldwater, who in the end did triumph over Pima County's crappy worldview deal.
Dangerous right-wing group.
So we hope that the Olivia Newton-John Institute of Australia, named after her for her wonderful ideas, then sues the city of Victoria for their crappy worldview deal also.
Melbourne, sir.
After that Australian guy did that show after me, I've never been the same about Australia. Between that and the lockdown mania of, it really turned me off to Australia.
Wait, that was, they went hard over on that one.
Woof! Cray cray. That's what happens when you have a country made created by criminals. The anti-Australian.
Penal colony, that's what it was.
We got so much stuff to do. Well, this is make you feel better. NBC News, Biden administration hunts for 50-plus immigrants delivered by Islamic State smugglers. We got that going for us. Where are they coming? Where did they come through? Homeland Security identifies 400 migrants brought to U.S. by ISIS-affiliated human smuggling network. They have 150 arrested, but the whereabouts of 50 are unknown. Well, that'll work out fine in the end. We'll be good. I'm sure they'll get on a Rex Scott motor coach and take them someplace. So that'll be beautiful. What else do we got? So that'll make us feel good. Biden, I love this one. Biden coach here. People will vote for Biden because they don't want tax increases.
Wait, what?
You know, I think we have to find, I'll find it for you. The Norm MacDonald, he would do the wait, what on the one season okay. of Sports Night. And there'd be like a stinger, and then he would go, wait, what? Let's get to some local stuff. KOLD News. And this is some really good work here, but it's by 13 News staff. No one wanted to put their name on it, or they put the junior intern on it, who doesn't get their name on the stuff. When Bud Foster sells you a bunch of crap, we got to get his name on it, right? Here we go. Dangerous and deadly few days in Tucson, Arizona. Someone was saying, man, this looks like a total ripoff of what the Tucson Crime Free Coalition did on their newsletter. And I'm saying, no, that's okay. Imitation, sincerest form of flattery here for me. I mean, the idea that you're, you know, one of your major news, local news things that a lot of people who are watching, especially voters, I mean, if you're Laura Conover, you hate that the TV stations, because what happens is Jetty's advertising on there, right? So you just do this and you go, man, well, how about a prosecutor that actually does crime? This is like a Laura Conover nightmare. It's been a dangerous and deadly few days in Tucson. Some of it related to weather. Stop, junior.
What?
Hold on. Hold on.
It's been 102 degrees for a few days. It's Tucson.
Oh, okay. So what they're saying is, the lady who died in the wash is at the end.
The lady who, yeah.
This is. I thought it was a heat thing.
You think you're going to get any more on that story?
No.
Not another word.
Not at all. I think they put in the, you got to look at the pictures on the Crime Free Coalition newsletter of what's in there. Josh has told me they have like, remember Kramer wanted to live with layers?
Yeah.
Right. Levels. Jerry, got levels, right? That's what they're living in. They have levels that the water can go underneath it when it rains. I mean, they got some things going on down there, right? So they go through it. Since Monday, June 17th, the day after Father's Day, all right, there's been 9 shootings. 9. And I got Kevin Dahl worried about Laura Conover and how, well, Ruben Gallego and Chris Mays loves her. I love that Kevin Dahl said that Chris Mays loves Laura Conover, because remember, we'll keep saying it over and over again, Chris Mays was a lifelong Republican until she ran for attorney general. So Jetty turned to a Republican because he was considered for a couple of months to run against LaWall,
sure,
and he didn't do it, so they're hitting him with that. So I love that Kevin Dahl, who's an ignorant little human being, this is where I get the pool clean. Ruben is pissed over there in Painted Hills.
But we can talk about that later. It's more than ignorance or being somebody's pool boy.
It's true. We'll get to that in the next segment. So anyway, 9 shootings since the 17th. So today's the 26th. So according to my math, that is a shooting a day in Tucson, Arizona. That's what we're down to. I like this one. Authorities are asking for help for solving most of the incidents. I bet. Man shot in his vehicle on East Benson Highway. Then they announced $2,500 reward information leading to the arrest of Treasure Frodsham, who was found dead in a vehicle in a shooting in South Tucson. June 18th, Jesse M. Ortiz was killed in a two-way vehicle crash near Midvale and South and West Argyle. Then we had 58-year-old Christopher Kershaw shot in his house near 5th and Craycroft. Then that suspect, who has not been named, was injured in an officer-involved shooting in Cochise County later that night. Martin Bloom died in a road rage near Ajo and Kinney. They said 77-year-old Robert Ryan's been charged with second-degree murder and being held on a $500,000 bond. 77-year-old road rage.
Correct.
Chill out, bro. The same day Bloom died, a pedestrian was hit by a train near Ina Road and I-10. 13 has been unable. I mean, the person that got hit by a train also had to be whacked out on drugs, most likely. Then there were also 3 shootings on the south side of Tucson in a matter of hours. And this is what our listener, Deb, was talking about when she tried to call the mayor on a radio show. First, TPD officers responded to South 13th and Drexel at 2:15. 22-year-old Ray Bernal Jr. Was found shot to death, and 35-year-old Daniel Gonzalez was arrested on first-degree murder and kidnapping. Around 3 hours later, they were called to 12th and Ajo for another shooting. Eliseo Herman was pronounced dead at the scene of a road rage incident. The shooter, a 21-year-old male, told the investigators there was a fight, and Herman was also charged with armed. The 21-year-old admitted to shooting Herman but wasn't arrested or cited. They're turning it over to the Pima County Attorney's Office. Oh, that'll work. The third shooting happened 30 minutes later at Westlake Village Apartments near Mission and Ajo.
The troubled Westlake Village apartment complex.
So one thing you find if you just look at the last names of a lot of people, again, Hispanics in Tucson are taking it in the chin all the time in this city. And again, I understand it's a tough, ugly situation, and for any of the city council to admit there's a problem, this is what leaders do. You admit there's a problem and you change course. But your egos, this is the thing. All of you think you're selfless servants, and you're not. You're selfish egomaniacs is what you are. I mean, how do you guys look at yourself in the mirror? You know, when anyone says, like, if you're interviewing any of these people, these elected officials, right? I know Ted had Jan on yesterday, right? I'd be fascinated. So, like, in Steve Rosenberg's Everything's Great in Tucson, Not Reality Biz Tucson, right? You would say, There's always this thing where they have like the bullcrap, like either SALC or RTA buy a $8,000 section where they do these fluff profiles of their board members and they ask them all the same question, right? Here's my one question for all of them that would, if they answered honestly, would blow all of their brains just like scanners, right? Do you believe that the Tucson-Pima County region is a region on the rise? And specifically explain why you think that.
Show your math.
Just ask that question. That's all you got to do.
Show your work. Yeah, absolutely.
They'll choke on it like you would never believe. Man, they don't even, I mean, what are they gonna say? The U of A? You mean the place that's $160 million in the hole? That one? What do you got for me? Right? It's the U of A Tech Park has four former students doing a thing where they have a laser that goes on a rat's head? Is that where we're at? Oh, is it Raytheon opening up new job opportunities at ASU? That's the question for the region, for all of these yahoos, unelected and elected, and if they run any of these organizations, ask them that question. Do you believe the Tucson-Pima County region is a region on the rise? And show your math. Please don't tell me it's Frank Nutt's ice rink. That's the question. Everything we've talked about on this show into one question for all of these people. Right? Michael Guyman, Rob Elias, Ted Maxwell. I'm friends with Ted. I like him. But what's the question? Right? Why is it a region on the rise? Right? Rahina Romero, Adelita Grijalva, Matt Hines, if you get the bagel out of his damn mouth, right? All of those people, right? Joe Snell, Rahina Romero, the pool boy, all these people, ask them that question. Ask Gabe Trujillo, ask Ekstrom's kid who runs TUSD now. Are we a region on the rise? Tell me and show your math. It's a tough question. They don't have much, and they've been there's the fog. We talk about the fog of war. There's the fog of government money for the last few years. I mean, they're so into themselves and delusional that they say they're dropping. Remember, they went from we just talked about this with Joanne on Monday. They went from a $1.3 billion budget to almost $2 billion. Now they're dropping at $300 million and going, look, we're cutting the budget. No, you're not. You're still way up. And they taxed you three times in a row to get there. Let's go to break. I'm amazingly late here. Poetry at the bottom of the hour. Playlist today is our good friend Patty Ruiz, our Bustos Media Tucson station manager. She's got a good mix of some classics in here. And we've learned she likes the Bee Gees, which is amazing. She's got some George Strait coming up soon. You're on Wake Up Tucson, 10:30 The Voice, local news and talk. This group's called Bread. Are they talking about making bread in the song?
Wants to make bread with you, yes.
No, that's awesome. This song brought to you by Don at Barrio Bread. Let's go to Windows. This is monsoon season.
Bread making is an art best shared.
Absolutely.
I want to make it with you, baby.
Good morning, Christopher. How can we help you today?
What a great... Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't realize I was on.
That's
okay. What a great song. I mean, what a great playlist.
Patty's bringing it.
Appropriate.
Good stuff.
Chris, you're like... I mean, Chris, look at you this morning. You are literally like a great white shark. You're just firing on all cylinders. You got the water over the gills. You got some open water. And I'll tell you what, dude. You're speaking truth. But you know the 80-20 rule. 80% don't care, 20% want to make it worse. Unfortunately, with the cadre that you're talking about, it's 100% don't care, and 100% want to make it worse, and the shootings have just begun, because
so,
it's only going to get worse.
I want to get to you. So what I've learned about some of these people you see who have been here for a while, who don't want to even mention things are bad. I always tell those people in private moments, they're still figuring out how to make money by taking advantage of the regional governmental situation. And I just, my take to them is, this is what you're doing. You're literally picking the last pieces of meat off of a carcass. right? That's where they're at.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know,
Uncle Sam's been on life support for quite some. It's amazing. It's amazing how tough our country, how tough our underpinning of our infrastructure, of our economy and everything is, that any other country would already be gone.
Well, you know, we don't really have real budgets, right? Because they always say, well, you know, the state of Arizona can't get away with it because they have to have a balanced budget, right? But in the end, and they can't print their own money. But what happens, like we've learned in the last 3.5 years, the federal government prints copious amounts of money and then sends it out to municipalities. So they don't directly print the money, but they're indirectly getting the printed money. So what's the difference?
Chris, they can't even print the money. It's impossible. The figures are so big. It's all just computer rigmarole.
Correct.
I mean, you can't physically, quantitatively get it. They already, I mean, I think the analogy, and it might have been 30 years ago, was, well, you could go to the moon and back with these deficits if you stack the money, or, you know, just stuff like that. After a while, it just falls on deaf ears. I'm telling you, man, America's got a problem. They're more worried. Did you see the dragons in New York? They're all up, and that's what America's all about.
You mean Komodo dragons? Like that.
No, there's some new Netflix or some new show with dragons, which is like, wow, that's original. Dragons, boy.
Actually, there's been too many bad movies about dragons. We need better movies with dragons in it.
It's
I'm just
a streaming
you.
Show, Chris. What's that? Lord of the Rings. Oh gosh, Chris, I'm just so I just don't know anything. I got to go back 30 years to know any media.
That's all
but
right,
Chris.
Yes, sir.
You got the fog of war into your rant, and I tell you what, buddy, I was impressed. God bless you and Godspeed.
Later, Christopher. Have a good day. Leslie Corby coming up next. She writes poetry about the bad ideals of progressivism. When I saw that, I said, "Give me some of that sweet action." Wake up. 7:34 in the morning. You're on Wake Up Tucson. We're playing our friend Patty Ruiz's playlist today. She did a good job with this. We just heard Kareem Abdul-Jabbar commercial on the show, which I kept on saying, doing airplane lines. I'm Roger Murdoch. I'm the co-pilot. So from
the Beatles used a lot of poetry in their songs.
Well, now we're stretching. I love it. First time ever. I think we haven't had a poet on the show in a while, so that's amazing. Welcome to the show, Leslie Corby, author, poet, and forgiver. She says the word attorney. God bless you. you're a brave girl. God bless you. Well, good morning.
Good morning.
Where are you calling from today?
Well, right now I'm in Grand Rapids, Michigan. I live in Utah, but I'm out here for a conference.
Ah, what kind of conference? Is it a law conference or a poetry conference?
Neither. I'm not sure if you've heard of Acton University with the Acton Institute, but I'm out here at their conference all week. So they do economics, faith-based faith-based economics, basically.
I love it. Talk about the journey to getting to be poet and printing poetry.
Sure. So I'm an attorney. I write. I have a nonfiction book that I'm working on that should be hopefully coming out sometime next year. But I actually decided to write poetry sometime, what was approximately February of last year, that I started writing poems and performing them at local, like, bars and coffee shops in the Salt Lake City area.
Yeah, I love it.
Yeah, so I did that for a couple of reasons. One was that I think that there's so much homogeneous thought in the art world. You know, when you think about art or poetry, you kind of automatically assume that it's going to come from a very specific likely some flavor of progressive standpoint. And I think that's unfortunate. And one of the reasons I think that's unfortunate is that it seems to me that one of the reasons progressives have been so good at monopolizing the culture in relation to, like, really winning the culture wars is that they've been able to define pain, right? Pain and suffering is something that progressives have been able to kind of corner the market on, right? When you think about something like a lived experience or marginalization, you kind of automatically think of it from a left-wing standpoint, right?
So why aren't more conservative people, because they have their own variety of pains, why don't you think they are jumping into expressing their pain through art?
I guess I think there's probably several reasons for that. One would be that most artistic spaces are so heavily left-wing dominant, they're not particularly friendly to the worldviews conservatives would hold. And then another is that it seems to me that, and I think it's a mistake, a lot of conservatives tend to focus heavily on the analytic to the exclusion of the emotive, which is it has benefits. Of course, you can't, you know, just be fully emotions don't tell you everything that's right or wrong, but as humans we're very holistic, right? We both have intellect and emotion. And so one of the reasons I actually did poetry was wrote poetry was to combine those two. So the poems take philosophy, history, and theological concepts and weave them into poetic thought. So it's a what I call analytic poetry. You're going to see a lot of metaphors that are touch on the senses of the mind as opposed to just the senses of the body. So think, you know, the five senses you often would see in poetry, which is fantastic, by the way.
Right.
That's not how I connect personally with the world as much. I tend to connect more with stimulus of the mind. And so I took those analytic tools and wove them into the poetry. So you would see, again, more stimulus related to how you think versus how you feel, essentially.
I think a friend of ours reminds us of the, I think it's Anthony Hopkins, John Quincy Adams in the movie Amistad in the trials, says the line, he or she who tells the best story wins.
Yes. Yes, and that was definitely on my mind as I wrote the collection, which is, by the way, broken into four sections. So it moves from yearnings, which are what I would consider to be the yearnings we all have, right? Things are just universal. We all yearn for acceptance to some degree. We struggle with the concept of relationship. We yearn for feeling connected to one another, things like that. So those poems are actually shorter, and I would say a little bit more in the style of what you would think. They're shorter poems, and they're closer to more classical forms of poetry. Then it moves from that section into Infinite Complexity, which grapples with, you know, large concepts like what is goodness, how do we understand, how to behave in the world, things of that nature, which again, everyone wrestles with that. And then it moves from there into Oppression, which specifically critiques the progressive view of human dignity in our current era. And then it moves from that into Hope, which is, I think, ultimately what we all yearn for. So it kind of ties the collection together, right? I think ultimately what we all want, regardless of the worldview standpoint we're coming from, is hope and beauty.
We're talking to Leslie Corbley, and the book is called Silent Suffering, Poems of Pain and Purpose. You can get it at Amazon and other fine book retailers, as we like to say. So, Leslie, what's an example of non-progressive pain that you gets represented in your work that the average bear doesn't think about
I would say one that comes to mind, particularly given the second anniversary of the overturning of Roe v. Wade, is there's actually a poem specifically dedicated to Dobbs babies. So those babies that were born following the closure of clinics that was triggered by the decision, right? A lot of states, Mississippi, I believe Oklahoma that's my home state, Oklahoma. That's where I'm from originally. But at any rate, there were, you know, a bunch of states that had trigger laws. So a lot of the clinics closed pretty quickly after the Dobbs decision was rendered. And so there's actually, fascinatingly enough, a specific subset that's to some degree quantifiable of human beings that progressives wish didn't exist. And I think that's fascinating from the standpoint of an ideology that preaches tolerance and acceptance, right? This is a a group of people that generally consider themselves to be highly compassionate. They wouldn't want anyone to ever feel as if they don't belong or are excluded. And yet this demographic exists. And so I think it really puts a lot of tension on their worldview. And in my view, given, I mean, obviously these children right now are, they can't be more than 2 years old at this point, just from a timing standpoint. And so I think it's very important for society to look at how we treat them, right?
helping
they may experience growing up.
So the left seems to always, their political thing is, we're going to release you from accountability for a variety of things. And having a child is the ultimate accountability.
Mm-hmm.
Right. A friend of ours, who a good listener to the show, she was, because they're trying to get a very draconian abortion ballot on the ballot, abortion proposition on the ballot in Arizona, which basically mm-hmm. says the words health professional, not a doctor, could be the girl who checks you in at the desk. Okay. And that health professional is going to determine the viability of the child. So literally, it's open season on a child in Arizona if this thing passes, right? It's called,
yeah.
I always love saying the word infanticide to petition gatherers. It seems to get them a little peeved at me, which is fine. But a friend of the show was at an outdoor concert, and the abortion petition gatherers were like, "Hey, would you like to sign this?" She's like, "What's this for?" And she goes, they're like, "Oh, it's for the abortion thing." And she goes, "I'm adopted. Why would I ever sign that?"
That's fantastic.
Right, which then shut down the entire conversation.
Yes, and that's where, again, I think we think of, well, not we. What I mean, in mainstream circles, and for instance, if you're just looking at the mainstream media, when it comes to the abortion question, there's a lot of compassion held for women and a lot of focus put on edge cases that may be helpful from a pro-choice standpoint, and very, very little discussion or discourse surrounding the effects of abortion on children, specifically, again, of course, unwanted children, or in this case, Dobbs babies. Humanity tends to be completely overlooked, which to me is bizarre, given that the vast majority of abortions in this country are elective and they don't involve, really odd circumstances that often are used as justifications for broader laws.
Changing the meaning of words, right?
Yes. You look at really narrow, there's just a lot of focus, again, on exceptions or really unique cases that are not representative of the vast majority of procedures that are performed in this nation. And so the pain, again, of the children, I think, is overlooked. And that includes living children who may be aware that perhaps they weren't wanted, or in this case, that quite literally they wouldn't be alive if a specific decision had not been rendered. Now, how those children will feel about their lives is what I actually find to be fascinating, right? I'm sure, given the shame that we placed on them, it wouldn't shock me if there's a cohort of that group that has a lot of self-loathing and shame towards themselves. I mean, even now, if you were to go to Reddit or Instagram or something like that, it's not difficult to find people who hold that perspective, who say, "I wish I had been killed. I wish I had been aborted because XYZ." So that's not a particularly unusual perspective. But I think it does point out some of the existential questions that progressives are not called to answer in the way, for instance, Christians or traditional conservatives will be asked. For example, you have a lot of critique of the concept of original sin and religion and what that might do psychologically to children as they grow up in highly religious settings where they may feel as if there's a lot of weight of sin on them, right? And I don't see how it's really that much different to expect progressives to be able to answer for why a child, in this case, a child born after Dobbs, may feel as though their life is quite literally the result of a human rights violation.
Well,
that'll be an example of some of the pain.
So, grinding up a preborn child and sucking it out with a vacuum is now called health care, right? That's what they keep telling you, healthcare.
Yeah.
And how
yeah.
many abortions are healthcare? There are ones that truly are, there is a healthcare aspect to it. But as you said, so many of them are elective that it's really a crap argument.
Instead, it's it's not the problem from my vantage point, the problem is it's not honest to use these edge cases as the conversation piece to the broader issue because the broader issue doesn't relate to narrow exceptions. If you want to have a conversation about narrow exceptions, I think most people in the pro-life movement can have that conversation. But the reality is progressives, Democrats, those on the left aren't particularly interested in having narrow laws that allow for exceptions. That's not what they, well, it's not really the goal. So I think,
as they like to say, it's the slippery slope away from where they want to go. yeah. Leslie, can you hold on for a commercial break? I want to do one more part of this discussion, which is your last section of your book, which is the hope part. So I want to talk about that when we come back, okay?
Sure.
All right, we're hanging out and catching up with Leslie Corbley. The book is Silent Suffering, Poems of Pain and Purpose. Came out a couple of months ago, and she sounds like a very thoughtful, intelligent woman. I'm enjoying the discussion right now. Tim Sandiford, VP of Goldwater, coming up at the top of the hour. Wake up, Tucson, 10:30 The Voice. 7:52 in the morning, you're on the Wake Up Tucson show, 10:30 The Voice, local news and talk. Having a good time talking to our new friend Leslie. Leslie, welcome back.
Thanks for having me.
All right, what's your last name? Say it.
Corbley.
That's what I thought. So, thank you.
Yeah.
You know what happened was, I think it was in the original email, they put Corby. But
oh, that's okay. You know, that's happened before.
That's fine. I'm there. I want to get to the damn bottom of these things is what I want to do. So I've been pushing the book here, Silent Suffering, Poems of Pain and Purpose, with Leslie Corbley, who of course is a poet, author, a lawyer. Anyway, I'm just kidding. So you're talking about the book. There's a hope part of your book, and there's a truism I've learned in talking about politics and government and culture and all of this jazz is people say, man, why is the country so screwed up? Why is most people in Congress a bunch of scumbags? All of these different things, right? And I always, we've gotten to a point where elections are temporary. Mm-hmm. The real change is strengthening the dynamics of faith, family, and schools. That's the only way to come back because that's denigrated over a 50 to 100 year period, my opinion. And I don't know how to, and this is why I want to get into the hope part of it is for Leslie Corbley, L-Y, what's the hope side of this for you guys? And that's expressed in the poetry.
Sure. So the hope section is designed to be a call back to the yearning. So it calls back to the original first section of the collection, and it sort of says this is what we hope for. We hope for life after death. I think as Christians, that's a big thing, certainly that I hope for. And we hope for there to be beauty in the world. So there's some poems in there in particular where I'm trying to think of that really, I think, connect with both the ideas of the past. So if you were, say, to have read some Christian existentialism or other historical works, you would see some inspiration that is embedded within the poetry. But a couple of them that stick out are, there's actually a poem on reclaiming prudence, because we move so quickly in the modern world. Our minds move really quickly, our technology moves really quickly, and there's a focus, not even just the pace at which we move, but the pace at which our ideologies change is very rapid. And there's in my view, a lack of time and attention given to just prudent, slower thought, right? Allowing ourselves to slow down, think more clearly, think more deeply about ourselves, about our desires, about who we are as human beings. I think that's often overlooked in a quest to fulfill every impulse we have. That's sort of the tendency of the modern era, is to say, I want, and find a way to actualize that desire as quickly as possible. So that's one of the poems in there. And then there's, I'm not sure if you yourself or your listeners are familiar with Dietrich Bonhoeffer, but there is a tribute to his life and work. So he was a theologian and pastor in the 20th century in Germany, and he led the German Confession Church during the rise of the Nazi Party, and was actually put to death for his part in the resistance to Nazi rule. in 1945, right before the war ended. And so I did a tribute to him specifically just because of how his amazing testimony at a time when that was very difficult. You know, he was one of the few that really stood up to the regime in his country from a very clear and principled Christian standpoint, as he was able to speak to culture in a very genuine and honest way, but in a way that was enduring. So if someone were to pick up his works and read it now, despite the fact that they were written in the 1930s and written to a very specific audience at a very specific time, they have an enduring nature. And that was one of my hopes for this collection, was that all
hang in there, cell phone,
and weaves them into the, you know, and weaves them into that analysis in a way that I hope is enduring across multiple generations.
What are two or three of your absolute desert island books, like the ones you keep going back to?
The ones I go back to.
And we have 2 minutes to answer that question.
I was going to say that's good. You're going to make me not overthink it. So The Cost of Discipleship by Dietrich Bonhoeffer is probably, I've read that book a lot. It's certainly probably the book I've read the most. I've read it somewhere like 4 to 5 times. Aside from that, books I've gone back to, I've really been enjoying Dostoevsky. So there's a poem actually that was inspired by Crime and Punishment that's in the collection as well. So I'd say that's another one. I'm definitely planning on going back and rereading Crime and Punishment. A third book that I go back to a lot, I'm trying to think, because there's I tend to just go through them and then go on to the next. I did read a lot of Chuck Colson in high school, though. Oh. Charles Colson. Yeah, so I've read a lot of his work. I can't recall if I've reread a lot of his books, but I did really enjoy his work as well.
What's your first concert you ever went to?
Oh, man, Miranda Lambert.
That's solid. What's the best concert you ever went to?
Oh, Tim McGraw and Faithful. I went to see them in, 2020? No, not 2020, 2018 maybe? Somewhere around that time frame. They were doing another big Soul to Soul concert series.
First car you drove that was actually yours?
Toyota Corolla.
Oh, that's solid. Solid. That's a good one for a young person. I love it.
Hey, you know, it lasted like 12, I can't remember how long, some ridiculous amount of time with an oil leak, so I'll take it.
Leslie Corbley, you've been a delight. Let's do it again.
Thank you so much. I appreciate you having me on.
Great job. All right, the book is Silent Suffering, Poems of Pain and Purpose. We're going to talk to VP of Litigation from Goldwater, Tim Sandifer, coming up next.